mental health issues to enlist, a policy change that, according to USA Today, started back in August but was not immediately announced. People with a history of bipolar disorder, depression, and drug and alcohol abuse can now apply for waivers. Waivers for people with mental health issues were banned in 2009 during an epidemic of soldiers committing suicide.
You're listening to USA Radio News. My name is Tim Berg.
I'm heading out for vacation in a few weeks, and you know, I'm really excited to have some time off, some extra good sleep, but then I get extra good sleep because of my pillow. So if you're craving that vacation kind of sleep, you know, you can get it at home anytime with a MyPillow. Now, one of the nicest things about the MyPillow, it stays cool all night long. You don't have to flip the silly thing over to the cooler side. It's always cool, and it keeps its shape all night long, so you don't have to wake up in the middle of the night to fluff the pillow up, make it nice. Just order a MyPillow with promo code USA. You're going to get 50% off a four-pack of pillows. That's two MyPillow premium pillows, custom fit for you, and two go-anywhere pillows. Again, use promo code USA to get 50% off. These pillows come with an amazing 60-day money-back guarantee, a 10-year warranty, 100% machine washable and dryable, and made in the USA. Go to MyPillow.com, scroll to the Radio 4-Pack Special, enter promo code USA, or call 800-951-8175. 800-951-8175. Promo code USA.
Weather this afternoon: chance of rain mainly before 4 p.m. Cloudy with a high near 45. North wind around 6 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 50%. New precipitation amounts of less than a tenth of an inch possible. Partly cloudy with a low around 31. This is tonight. Partly cloudy with a low around 31. North wind around 5 miles per hour. Tuesday, mostly sunny with a high near 50, north wind around 5 miles per hour. Tuesday night, partly cloudy with a low around 32, north wind around 5 miles per hour. Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high near 50, light and variable wind. Wednesday night, a chance of showers mainly after 1 a.m. Mostly cloudy with a low around 38. Chance of precipitation is 30%. New precipitation amounts of less than a tenth of an inch possible.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Good afternoon and welcome to Mental Health Matters. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host, and my co-host is Tracy Ivey. And this is NAMI's Hour, compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and there is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, New Jersey, we are all volunteers. We have no office, no paid staff. We work out of our houses, mainly out of the dining room, and the only traffic is going from the dining room to the living room or their family room. But other than that, what we try to do is we try to help people who either have someone in their family or someone they know or work with or next-door neighbor who have a mental illness. And we try to help the people with the mental illness get the right services that they need. And we do it in various ways. We teach a 12-week family-to-family class, which is goes over medications, side effects, what to do, what not to do, what to say, what not to say in certain situations. And it tries to get the person taking the class to feel what it's like to be the person with the illness. We also have what they call a basics course, which is for families who have children under the age of 18 who are suffering from any kind of mental health issues, ADHD, which many people don't realize is considered a mental illness. And, you know, that's a six-week course. We also run a support group right here in Flemington, New Jersey, at 52 East Main Street. And it's the third Thursday of every month from 7 to 8:30. And usually it doesn't get over till 9. But it's totally free. You don't have to register. You do have to register for the classes, but other than that, everything is free. There's no charge for the books or material or anything like that. And all the teachers, including myself, are certified to be teachers for it. And we're also certified to run the support group. So you're more than welcome. If you need some more information or if you'd like to call, the number is 908-284-0500. That's 908-284-0500. And this is Mental Health Matters, and we are very privileged today to have with us Colleen Duer, who is the Development Director of Family Promise. Is that right?
That's right.
All right. All right, Colleen, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks, Larry.
I mean that.
I enjoy being here
with you. It's a lot of information, and it's a lot of fun. But now, would you explain what a development director does?
Oh, I could try.
Tell the good parts so your boss don't get the wrong idea, you know?
At a very top level, a development director typically is responsible for the fundraising and possibly the communications of the organization. It depends on the size of the organization. We're quite small, so I handle fundraising, event planning. I also do community awareness, community education, all of our social media, our communications. And we're in a co-director situation, so Donna Michelson is my co-director. She handles all the case management and runs our volunteer network. So as she likes to say, she takes care of things inside the house, and I take care of things outside the house.
Okay. All right. Would you explain, for those who may not know, what exactly Family Promise is?
I would be happy to. Family Promise of Hunterdon County is an affiliate of a larger network called Family Promise National. And we are a homeless shelter primarily for families. But our model is a little bit different. We do not look like a typical drop-in emergency or more urban shelter situation. Our shelter sites actually are at congregations and host sites throughout Hunterdon County. So our families come to our day center during the day, and on nights and weekends, they spend that time at those host sites for 1 week at a time, and they are then cared for by volunteers. Everything from meals to an overnight shift is all done by volunteers. So it's a unique shelter model.
I know my wife's church has Family Promise in Methodist Church in Clinton.
Mm-hmm. And we do appreciate that.
And she also has been doing, long before her church started taking people, she'd been volunteering with cooking and, serving it and so on and so forth. So
it's a lot of work, and we are nothing without our volunteers. So we are deeply grateful to them.
And they also, aside from when my wife cooks, she comes with, four or five other women who cook and serve and all that jazz and do the dishes afterwards and everything. But then they have people that come in like at 8 o'clock at night or mm-hmm. something till
7 a.m.
7 a.m. Mm-hmm. in the morning. And they sleep over there with them and everything, correct?
That's correct. That's actually my favorite volunteer shift because I just show up with my iPad and my toothbrush and say goodnight to everyone.
Do you get any sleep?
I do. Okay. Actually, it's not so bad. We use air mattresses mm-hmm. and, It's not so bad.
Let me backtrack for a second. When you say host sites, are you talking about something in addition to churches, or is it only primarily at churches?
The model itself is churches. However, I'm very careful and very vocal about making people aware that we are not limiting ourselves to churches. The way our program started was actually by a woman named Karen Olson in Summit, New Jersey. And Karen, close to 30 years ago, had befriended a homeless woman named Millie. And Millie had asked for a sandwich, and Karen gave her the sandwich, and Karen started to walk away, and Millie sort of gently grabbed her and said, "No, could you please just talk to me?" And so Karen just, felt this gravitational pull towards not just Millie, but towards the issue. And so in her county, her Morris County location, she tried to start a traditional homeless shelter and was thwarted for various reasons. And then sort of looked at the church model, which had been growing in popularity throughout the country. Because if you look at a congregation of any denomination, very often you have rooms or space that is going underutilized as much as 6 days a week. So you might have educational classrooms that get used on Saturdays or Sundays, but not through the rest of the week. And so then she sort of looked at that and thought, well, not only do we have this use of space, but we have a natural pool of volunteers. And it's been my experience, and I'm just throwing this in anecdotally, that I find that congregations, again, of any denomination, are where things get done. You typically have a group of people who certainly ask intelligent questions but don't tend to overthink it. They see a need, and they see that need has to be met. They see them as having the ability to meet that need, and so they just tend to move forth and do that. So that's why it was built upon congregations, but we are not a religious organization by any stretch. If we had a corporation, a bed and breakfast, a school, a healthcare facility that said, hey, we have this same space, would you like it? We would jump all over that. So we are not limiting ourselves to congregations. It's just the way the program was created and developed.
Okay. Did you ever try, like, some of the hotels in the area?
We can house in hotels. We try not to because it's not the spirit of the program. But we actually started doing sort of, part of my job, you asked about development. And one of the things that I'm working on is to basically price out the cost of hosting our families for a week. In other words, what it would cost to house and feed them in a motel for a week. So that if there are churches or groups or corporations who say, listen, I don't have the ability to host, but I would be willing to host your families in a hotel, we estimate it to be at somewhere around $2,500 a week to host our families for a week in a hotel. So we have that as an option, and we're actually going to use that option for 1 week in the coming year.
Okay.
So certainly we would look at that as a viable alternative, but we try to stick with the host site model because that's where you're greeted by volunteers and you have a meal prepared and you sit down and share that meal and, you know, you have that interaction, which is something that we think is really valuable.
Right. Does that $2,500 include the food also?
It would, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
The most of the people you help are single parents.
Yes.
All right. What do you feel causes their situation?
You know, it's funny because when I first started in this job 5-6 years ago, I was on the affordable housing bandwagon. I thought that's the crux of the issue here. That's what we have to change. And we do.
We still do, yes.
Horrifying problem in our county, and it's not getting any better.
Nope.
But it's so much more complex than that. And now when I look at the causes of homelessness, there are things like medical issues, evictions, there are job loss. There are all kinds of reasons why somebody becomes homeless. But the reality is, in so many cases, you don't have a support system. If I was a single parent, which I'm very blessed that I'm not, I have a wonderful husband, we work together. If that weren't the case and something hit the skids, I have family that would help me out. But in so many cases, our families don't have that support system, or their support system is there, but they're stretched.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have that ability to fall back. There is no real safety net. And so that's how they end up in a situation with us.
Now, isn't most of your single parents women?
Mostly, yes. We do have single dads.
Right.
Single
dads with children,
yes,
that they're responsible for.
Exactly.
Right.
That is, okay. A family is a parent and children.
Right.
We will take single women into our program if there's space available, but families will always get priority.
Right, right.
Not single men, then.
No, we do not house single men. Single men in our county are housed in motels.
Mm-hmm. If the parent isn't working, what happens then? Do you help them look for jobs, or?
We certainly try. We try to go down every viable option for that family. Not every person can work.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you and I could have a healthy discussion about all the reasons why. But if somebody can work, we certainly would like to make that connection because we see so much value in work beyond just the income.
Right, right.
So, yes, we have connections with employment programs throughout the county. But we also have to help them access other resources because if you're talking about someone coming from a crisis situation and you're looking at what is in most cases a minimum wage job, they're going to bring in, if they work, say, 30, 40 hours a week, what, $12 to $1,800 a month, right? Somewhere in that neighborhood. The fair market rent for a two-bedroom apartment in Hunterdon County is over $1,500 a month. The math doesn't work.
Nope.
No. So it really is more complicated than just get a job. Having said that, we certainly try to encourage families, they are able to get a job, to get that job. And where we can, we have programs, small, but we try. We have a sustainable housing program to help families who are pursuing an education. Even if it's an online certification, if that education is going to lead to a living wage or closer to living wage job, we can help pay or subsidize rent for a year while they are pursuing that, because they often can't take extra hours or work all those jobs and do the requirements for their program. So we've had moms get bachelor's degrees and online certifications in veterinary programs, healthcare programs. One woman was pursuing the hours that she needed for a medical death investigation license. So in order to get those hours in, she had to cut her hours back as a waitress. So we like to try and help facilitate that if we can, because when you can get into living wage, which, by the way, is well over $20 an hour, that's how you can start to become more stable.
And a lot of these folks, a lot of these parents, they have underage kids, correct?
Underage meaning under 18.
Under 18.
Oh, yes.
Right.
Yes.
I would think it's very difficult for the kids. So how do they deal? How do you help them?
To be in shelter?
Yeah, to be homeless and to be moved around week after week.
And how often are they moved around, too?
They stay a week at a time. So each Sunday is move day. It depends on the age of the kids, to be quite honest. The older kids, the middle school and high school age kids, can struggle. And that can happen if they are at a shelter site and they see somebody from their school, whether it's a student or a teacher. So we try to, certainly when they're in, if they're at a host site that's in their school district, Donna tries very hard to make sure that that doesn't happen, but it, you know, it's best efforts. The younger kids do really, really well. They do really well. They are going to host sites with volunteers who are playing with them and enjoying them. They're getting different foods, which doesn't always come off as a big hit, but, you know, certainly they have people cooking for them. But they do really well, and I always like to give the example of one little girl who has been in housing now for 2 years. They were with us a little over 2 years ago, and she called all of the churches castles. And so she still drives around Hunterdon County with her mom and goes, "Mommy, we were in that castle, and I remember that castle, and I remember we lived in castle."
Mm-hmm.
So the younger kids actually do quite well.
Right.
But yeah, you're right. The older kids, it can be a struggle.
And what programs, like, for you said you had volunteer to do for younger kids. What do they do?
You mean while they're with us?
Right. In other words, like, if the parent's going to be in a program looking for a job or whatever she's doing, and the younger child is, or children, because some of them have more than one.
So the parents are always going to be responsible for their children in our program.
Right.
So even as if they're at the volunteer, the overnight sites, they are still responsible for their child care.
Right, but what, so, like during the day when the parent is, say, I don't know, going online to try to get a degree or to get or something, the child is in what? In
most likely in those cases, they would either be in a child care or they would be in school. So when they come to us, because of the McKinney-Vento Act, they have the right to be educated in the school district where they are homeless or from where they became homeless. So that means that if they're coming to us from another school district, that school district actually has to transport them back and forth.
Okay.
And the McKinney-Vento Act is all about education, and it's been statistically proven that a child can lose up to 30% of their educational process if they move in the middle of the school year. So they don't have to do that. So if they are school age, meaning really preschool, not necessarily preschool, but like a pre-K, kindergarten on up, that school district has to transport them. If the parent is doing a work program, a formalized work program through the county, they would be in child care.
Okay.
But if somebody, why would you accept somebody from a different county? I guess, is it territorial?
So our policy is that families from Hunterdon County will get the first priority.
Okay.
A single woman from Hunterdon County would get second priority. If we have space available, we will take families from other counties for two reasons. One, we are part of what's called a continuum of care. It's a HUD mandate. If you accept HUD funding, you have to be part of a continuum of care. Most of those COCs are county. Ours is tri-county. So we actually coordinate with Warren and Sussex County.
Okay.
So our third priority would go to a family coming from Sussex or Warren County because we are part of that COC.
Mm-hmm.
And then if there's space available, we will, on a case-by-case basis, take a family in for the simple reason that we think it's unconscionable to leave a family homeless if we have space available.
Right.
Now, families coming from out of county, that could be challenging. That brings its own unique set of challenges. And so sometimes we will put a 90-day limit where we don't necessarily for other families because mm-hmm. we will just say, listen, we are going to have a difficult time finding housing for you, but we'll keep you safe for 90 days until you can find another option. So it's not, you know, our typical, well, not typical, our goal in every case is to find housing. We consider ourselves the end of the line, not just a shelter that's going to move mm-hmm. you down the road. Mm-hmm. We want to find you housing. But there are those unique cases where we know right up front this is going to be way too much a challenge, particularly in Hunterdon County. So we know we can keep you safe for 90 days and maybe find you some options. But if that doesn't happen, that's where we are.
What is the time limit for a family? Or is there a time limit?
We don't have a time limit. We try for 60 to 90 days. And the reason is, just on a very practical and emotional level, that's when things can become very difficult. Someone who's been in shelter and moving week to week, who is not making progress after 60 to 90 days, is going to get very, very frustrated. But by the same token, if our goal is to get you into housing, sometimes that can take months. So if you're showing Donna through the case management process that you're goal setting, you're reaching your goals, you're making, but it's just taking longer, we are not going to leave you on the street. We're not going to do that. If we see that you're making progress towards a realistic goal, we're going to stick with you. But like I said, in some cases, if you just have these really difficult situations that it's...
It seems to me, though, the income already, as you mentioned, if they're even working minimum wage... They're not going to have enough money.
They're going to be hoping for housing subsidies.
Okay.
And then
what, HUD
and,
through HUD.
Yeah, HUD.
It depends. There's various programs that we have. Some are more temporary than others. The Section 8 process is really, really complicated. We don't need to get into that.
No.
And you, I know you're familiar with that process as well. But we have what's called rapid rehousing funding, and it's a HUD-funded program because many years ago, the notion with HUD was get all the pieces in place, then find someone housing. Okay, so deal with all the issues, tie up all the loose ends, then find them housing so that they're stabilized. I don't know how many years ago it's been that HUD adopted what's called a housing first philosophy, where they completely reversed that and said, let's get folks into housing and remove that stressor. Right. Get them stabilized, and then put all the pieces in place. And so they created these rapid rehousing programs. We have two available to us, depending on the timing. Right now, we don't because we're in between funding cycles, and it can take close to a year for us to get access to that money. But depending on the program, they run differently. Typically, it's a step-down program, so we can pay 100% of your rent for 3 months and then 75% and then 50% so that you start working towards being able to independently pay your rent. Mm-hmm. It is a really well-intentioned program. In Hunterdon County, it's a little tough to get stabilized after 1 year, but it certainly helps, and it certainly is a viable exit option. But if you are making that money, it allows you to start to save that. And Donna's going to meet with you every month and go over your budget and make sure that you're on track. And that's where we are.
You know, it just amazes me that Hunterdon County is considered one of the richest counties in the country. And I hear people, oh, we don't have homeless. We don't have, you know,
you should really come visit me.
Yeah, I can take you to three places where I know that there's people living mm-hmm. homeless right now, today. And, you know, it's amazing. You know?
Well, there's a tagline on our website that says, every night in Hunterdon County, a child is homeless. And that's not marketing. That's truth.
It is.
I've been there almost 6 years. Donna's been there 11 years. We haven't been empty.
And, you know, it's last, a week ago Friday, there was a, don't ask me what CARE stands for because I don't know, but it was for low-income mm-hmm. and homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And they had knapsacks with, you know, well, you were there.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, at the end, you were there.
Yes, my board president covered that one for me.
Yeah, I know.
Thank
she
you,
did.
Maggie.
Yeah. And I mistakenly, Colleen just came out, you know, and she got a little upset with me calling her Colleen. I figured, well, what the heck, you know, Colleen's prettier than you, so, you know.
Well, don't you said that.
Unless she's listening. But anyway, it was so great because there was, they would give knapsacks out with underwear, socks, and stuff in them. They give knapsacks for kids who maybe the people had children, and they give them a nap. And then the Salvation Army brought all these coats and jackets mm-hmm. and stuff, and they were giving those out. My point being, there was a fella who we helped, my wife and I privately helped, stay in a hotel for a while. And I saw him there, and I said, hey, how you doing, Mike? He was still homeless. Now, this has been months. And he told me where he lives at night. I won't repeat it because,
I probably know.
But actually, I was surprised because it wasn't where I thought, you know. Because I thought, like you, I probably know. But then he told me, and I went, whoa, you know. But anyway, and, you know, it's just, it's sad, you know. He goes to the Getting Together Center during the day, mm-hmm. and then when they close,
he's on his own.
He's on his own, right. And it's just, it's so sad. And to think that, you know, people don't realize that there is homeless in this county or people that are very poor. And, you know, because, oh, this is such a rich county. I often wonder what the hell I'm doing here. But, it's just, but, you know, it's so sad because nobody, a large percentage of the population don't realize that there is another percentage of the population that can really use help.
Yeah, and I think that help can happen. It's just, it takes a very committed, fairly Herculean effort. Our numbers are not huge in Hunterdon County. It's a solvable problem. I would really love to see a shelter for singles,
a brick and mortar
shelter with intensive case management and permanent supportive housing vouchers where a case manager is going to check on you and make sure that you're paying your bills and not hoarding and taking care of the place. And, you know, those are all solvable problems, but is going to take the concern, the money, the effort, the will. And again, we do not have a massive homeless problem, but we have homeless people here, right. And we're not putting the resources behind solving that.
And I'm thinking of that VFW hall that was just torn down in Flemington. I assume there's somebody else who's building something there, but there's the kind of a building that possibly could have been used for something like this.
Yeah, I think
if the funding were in place.
Buildings are there, but we live in a not-in-my-backyard sort of environment, so that's
That's on Route 31. That's not even in a residential area.
I would love to see a brick-and-mortar building and mm-hmm. see that case management on site. And
I agree. Mm-hmm. I agree.
Sure. I'm going to ask you a question. Mm-hmm. How did you get into this field?
Oh, good question. I don't know how far back to go. I actually graduated with a degree in communications and logically ended up working in banking. So my career has taken a couple left turns, but I actually worked for our Hunterdon Medical Center Foundation. So that's when I got into the nonprofit world. I was organizing a big fundraising event and started working there, worked for another nonprofit, and really just fell in love with the nonprofit world and had been volunteering with Family Promise since probably close to 20 years. My kids were real little, and I loved the fact that you could volunteer with little children. That is not an easy thing to find. We live in a very litigious society, I'm sorry to say, and so often your kids have to be 18 or 16 or even 12.
Right.
So I sort of fell in love with the program that way, and I knew the executive director at the time, and thought I would do some consulting work, and that's how I started working here. And then it became obvious that there was an opportunity to bring a development person on staff And through a couple of transitions, I'm still here, so 6 years later.
Okay. We know that you have a lot. Most of your work is done by volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do they receive training?
They do, yes. There is a volunteer training that takes place. In addition to that, we have our volunteers are managed by volunteer coordinators. So each host and support site has a coordinator that manages the volunteers. About three times a year, we hold coordinator training for them. So we give them updates for the coordinators,
okay.
Yes. And then we rely on them to pass the information down to their volunteers. So I was actually intrigued by your class about support systems, about family,
right?
Because that's relevant for our folks. That might be something that our volunteers would benefit from. Because, as you and I have spoken about, mental health issues are pretty prevalent. I've told Larry this story before, but when I was writing a grant one day, we work in a kind of a fishbowl, and I was writing a grant one day, and I sort of yelled over my shoulder to Donna and said, "What percentage of our families have mental health issues?" And she went, 100. She said, "Colleen, they're depression and anxiety at the very least. They've just declared themselves homeless." And I went, "Duh." And so these are very, very real issues. And we do have a mental health program. It's privately funded because waiting for services through the county can be quite lengthy. And so we are able to tap into funding right away. We have counselors. We have therapists. We have a music therapist that comes every week. We have a counselor who comes and does a parenting in a crisis session once a week, which has been just tremendously beneficial. But we're starting to see very real opportunities to do these types of trainings on the other side,
mm-hmm.
to help our volunteers to be patient, to be understanding, to understand that what they're seeing is temporary and that these families are very much in a crisis.
Right. And, I use the example with people with mental illness. My son, my youngest son, has mental illness. Now, when I'm talking to people, it's like he didn't raise his hand and volunteer for this. He didn't say, "Oh, give it to me. I want to be schizophrenic."
Right.
It's a chemical imbalance of the brain. People don't raise their hand and say, "Give me cancer." Whether it's breast cancer or kidney cancer or whatever, skin cancer, they don't say, "I want it." Just like they don't want to be a diabetic, or have a heart condition. So it's not like, and a lot of times people who are, from my little experience with people who are homeless, they didn't ask to be homeless.
It's not a lifestyle choice that you would necessarily.
Right, exactly. It's a family situation that happened, for whatever reason. But 9 times out of 10, it wasn't that they raised their hand and said, "Oh, I'll be homeless." You know what I'm saying?
It's very stressful. And there was one former client of ours who told us, and I just love the way she framed this. She said, "When I came into the program, I had this vision of a bare room and a light bulb." She was thinking of a homeless shelter. And she said, "After I left the program, I realized how completely self-absorbed I was and how I hadn't thanked anyone because I was so focused on myself and my child and so focused on what I needed to get through the next day and to get her through the next day. And did I remember to bring this and remember to bring that she never really looked up and said, thank you." And we've heard that from a couple of people in different, they phrased it different ways. But the gratitude exists after they leave and they look back and say, "I made it through that portion of my life. And these people were pretty amazing. But while they're in it, they're so anxious, depressed, stressed out, in crisis. They feel like they're being watched." That's why we have this parenting in a crisis class, which we really call parenting in a fishbowl. Because, I always use the example, have you ever flown with children? And you get on a plane, and no matter what they do, you feel like all those eyes are on you. And that's what our families feel like. And they're in this program with up to 3 other families that they didn't know, didn't choose to be with, who have different parenting styles, different bedtimes, different rules. They're with volunteers who, in some cases, maybe overindulge their children, maybe, you know, are trying to parent for them. And these are all stressors for them.
Right.
And it can be really hard in that sense on them. And so I think, you know, back to what we were talking about, I think that there would be some opportunity for volunteers to really understand just how stressful it is.
Right. As you said, and not pass judgment on them.
And that's hard sometimes.
Yeah.
I, you know, if we're being honest, that can be very, very hard. But you know, I always tell everyone there's always a backstory. You yep. know, we had two women in the program with young children a couple of summers ago, and they would come into the host site at night and the kids would be lunatics. I mean, bouncing off the walls, lunatics, and the moms were really, really cranky. And so then we explained to them, they're in a work first program. What that means is that they get on the link at 6:30 in the morning from the host site that takes them to our day center. From there, they get back on the link and they go up to Lebanon and drop their children off at childcare. They get back on the link, come down to Flemington and do their work first program, get back on the link, go up to Lebanon and pick up their children, get back on the link, come down to Flemington to our host site, then get back on the link and go to you. It's July and we're wondering why the kids are nut jobs. Okay. But when I tell that story, everybody goes, oh, right. So there's always a backstory. And sometimes sure. we can't tell the backstory because it's confidential. And,
right.
you know, it's not fair to the clients to divulge case management sure. information. But sometimes you just have to trust us. There's always a backstory. They're trying to knit the pieces. You know, we say goal setting, put the pieces in place. Now you've got parents who are, they could be starting from, I don't have my kids' birth certificates. They've got to get documentation sorted out. They've got to get school sorted out. They've got kids who are telling their teachers, I left my homework at the church. Well, what does that mean, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they're dealing with all this. They're going to work, and then the school is calling because their kid is sick, right? These are all constant stressors right. and pushes and pulls, and so you're trying to exist in this environment. Now, I've given you all the reasons that it's a tough program. What we haven't talked about is why it's so great that you go to these sites and you're cared for by volunteers. Because the good that comes out of that is you've got a community showing you that they care. You've got neighbors helping neighbors. Nobody who volunteers for our program can suggest there isn't a homeless problem in Hunterdon County. There's a beautiful networking opportunity. I mean, our families have gotten furniture, car donations, job opportunities. All kinds of really great, caring people are surrounding them and making sure that when they move into housing, they have couches and beds and dishes. So that's the beauty of the program. And we certainly have volunteers who struggle, but we have so many volunteers who care so deeply about our families that just push all of that aside and love them.
When someone comes up to you and, okay, I want to volunteer. What's the next step? What is the process from that?
So we have a lot of information on our website about what it's like to volunteer, what a typical host session or evening at a church would look like. We encourage everyone, if at all possible, to come meet us in our office. Come see the day center. Sit down and chat. We have a volunteer application. And then we would connect you with... We can do it in a couple ways. If you have a church home that happens to be part of our network, that's an easy connection. If you don't, it doesn't matter. Like I said, it's not a religious organization by any stretch. So you can make a decision. Do you want to volunteer at somewhere close to home, somewhere close to work? You choose a place. We'll link you up with that coordinator so that they can contact you when the shifts need to be filled. Or you could say, listen, just give my name to all the coordinators, and when there's holes in the schedule and they need a couple shifts filled, have them call me, have them email me. So you can be sort of that on-call person that can go from one host site mm-hmm. to the next and just plug it in. Our real need is always weekend coverage. As you can imagine, that's...
Sure.
That's a struggle because we're talking all day Saturday. And so if there is anyone or any group interested in doing that, gosh, we'd love to have you. We try to have more than two or three people volunteering on each shift because that's a little overwhelming to have, you know, an entire Girl Scout troop come in for seven people. So that can be just a little bit too much. But, you know, if you're willing to split up the shifts and cover those Saturdays, that's ideal. And like I said, you know, I talked to a gentleman at a host site last week and thanked him because he'll do overnight shifts, which can be tough. And he said, and I quote, "I actually really like this because I'm pretty antisocial." He doesn't want to talk to anybody. Yeah. Great, we can do that too.
Yeah. Stay overnight. Yeah. But I know when I had to drop my wife off at her church. When we didn't have the car, and they were doing, you know, a meal, mm-hmm. right? And so when I came to pick her up, it was earlier, you know, maybe a half hour earlier than, but that's, I was done, and so I stopped, and so I'm sitting there, and there was a family there, and they had a little boy, and he wasn't many taller than that, right? And he had a soccer ball. So we're in this pretty big community hall at the church, and so he's kicking a soccer ball, right? So his mother gets, "Stop that, you know, blah, 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 don't do that." So I went over to his mother. I says, "Can I play with him?" She says, "In here?" I says, "Yeah, you know, we're not going to break anything." I said, "Anyway, that's my wife over there." I said, if it gets too bad, she'll yell at me, you know. So the mother says, "Yeah, sure." Well, that little kid and I had a ball. You know, he's kicking a ball.
Play is the great equalizer,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
I mean, that
you know?
Was the beauty of taking my children to volunteer. Yeah. You know, they don't care. My kids didn't, and I didn't, you know, my husband and I didn't set them up.
Right.
We didn't say we're going to go have dinner with homeless people. We said we're going to go have dinner at church. And we had dinner, and they played, and you can spin, you can kick a ball around, you can play basketball, you can watch a movie together, whatever. I mean, it's the great equalizer.
Right.
And so, yes, it's you know, over time, our kids started to learn, oh, well, that is their home. You know, they started to understand as we pulled into our garage and our nice house that, you know, oh, okay, things, but let that click on its own.
Right.
You know, we didn't have to be so literal about teaching them a lesson. And I think that's the beauty of the program too, is when you have volunteers, they're just families. They're just families.
Sure.
They're like, they're interesting. They're funny. They're sweet. They're just in a really tough spot right now. And one of the great quotes that I love is, homeless people are not social inadequates. They're people without homes. And that's such a powerful statement, and it's so true.
Right.
And, you know, my coworker, Donna, doesn't like when people say, you know, we're one paycheck away. She prefers to categorize it as we're one major crisis away, right? Any one of us is one major crisis away.
That's right.
Now, a crisis to us is probably much, much, much larger than it is to our families. To them, it's car repair. It's a medical bill. Car repair can send you into homelessness.
Yeah.
That's the crisis. That's the level of crisis that we're talking about when you're teetering on the edge. So understanding that there are families in crisis, that's all. But they're just family. They're people.
And how many other families are in crisis that may not be homeless, you know, but
yeah.
maybe next to being homeless, you know. You know, it just brings back four kids that we had. At one time, we had four kids, a mortgage, car payments, medical bills, taxes, and I was out of a job.
Yeah, so you can empathize.
So you say, people would ask me, well, how'd you get to go to work for Wonder Bread? Because I had four kids,
right.
taxes, you know,
right.
mortgage, car payment. You know, that's how I went to work for them. Not that I didn't like the job after I got there. That was
right.
fine. But it was why I took it. Not that, oh, gee, this is what I always wanted to do. You know, no, but it would pay the bills, you know.
Right.
And,
right.
you know, and a lot of times people are in a situation that the job doesn't come along and they lose their house for whatever reason. And then they're homeless. And then now they got young kids and they're homeless, you know, and now it's even twice as bad. It's one thing for an adult to be homeless. It's not good. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that it's fine.
Right.
But it's a lot different to be an adult with two young kids.
The stakes
to be
are
homeless.
A lot higher.
Right.
And it's a lot harder. You know,
absolutely.
When I gave you those numbers, those are for two-bedroom apartments.
Right.
You know, because as a parent, that's the least that you need.
Right.
And really, you know, granted, there are people who probably say, listen, I can make do with a one bedroom, but a landlord isn't going to allow it.
Right.
So that's what makes it so much more complicated, is the numbers are a lot higher. The stakes are a lot higher. You're a lot more vulnerable. It's not just, oh, I'm at work and I don't feel well. It's I'm at work and my kid's at school and they don't feel well. Now yeah. What? You know,
exactly.
It's hard. And in Hunterdon County, we say there's four legs of the table in this county, and it is somewhat unique in that housing, employment, child care, and transportation.
Transportation.
And transportation's a big one, because we love the link. You won't get me to say a bad word about the link. We love them. But it is not a viable way to get to and from work, and what happens when the school calls. So you really need personal transportation. You know, we all know how much those car repair bills cost and how much tires cost and preventative maintenance, you know, if you do it.
Just take an oil change.
Right. Yeah. So that is incredibly expensive. We do have a car donation program where we accept cars in decent working condition, or that could be put into decent working condition. And they will go to families who are working because they need that transportation. Mm-hmm. Now, we are so grateful for these cars, but we're lucky to get one with less than 150,000 miles on it. We're lucky if we get one with less than that. So when we get these cars road ready, we know it's only a matter of time.
Right. They're not going to last that much longer.
Yeah.
And then there's going to be another car repair bill.
Expensive, but it is so necessary. And those four legs are never stable at the same time.
No.
Child care is a big issue.
Sure.
You know, because I know there's people listening that are thinking, well, why not get that second job? Sure. Two problems. One, a lot of employers in the county will not give you set hours. So they won't give you Monday through Thursday from 8 to 1 so that you can take that second job. Number two, there is virtually no child care that I know of on nights and weekends. So if you don't have a support system and you're making $9, $10 an hour, anybody hire a babysitter recently? My kids are way beyond that, but I know what my kids made as babysitters, and it was at least that much.
Mm-hmm.
So
you're in a negative cash flow.
Exactly.
While you're working. Yeah.
Exactly. So child care is a real issue. We also have child care subsidies in our county, but they're never enough to cover the actual cost of the child care, so there's an overage. There's only, I think, two, maybe three child care centers in the county that will waive that overage, that excess fee. So now you've got child care costs that could be up to $100 a week. That's
right.
A lot of money.
Right.
It's a lot of money.
Especially if you're only making $150 to $200 a week.
Colleen, you said it's a solvable problem. That was a wonderful quote you said. So I'm looking at, how do you solve it?
What for families or singles? I mean, we talked about the idea of shelter and housing vouchers for singles. I think for families, it's really a combination of a lot of different things. I think we've got to get into a living wage situation gradually.
Right.
We've got to get living wage employment. We've got to get some extra help on child care, something for nights and weekends so people can take that second job if they need to. I don't know what we're going to do about transportation. I don't know what we're going to do. I don't see.
There's little taxi companies here and there, but
they're
I'm sure
expensive.
They're really expensive.
Yeah, they really
are.
And I suppose you could drive.
You know, you can live in the borough. Then we have a vacancy rate. You know, our vacancy rate in 2010 across the board, all over the county, all rental units from Tewksbury to Lambertville was 5.2%, I think. It is now down to 3.4% in 2015.
Yeah.
We do have some affordable housing going up, and I will tell you that's a blessing. It's not enough, but I'm so grateful to see it. And I think listeners need to know what it takes to get into one of these units. It is a long, arduous process.
Oh,
it is like a 34-page application. A typical apartment application is one or two pages. It is a long, arduous process. But we have one family, single mom, two little kids, who just got one unit. She has gone from paying $1,100 a month to $625. That's huge.
Absolutely.
That is a huge break. Sure is. That's manageable.
Right.
That's a situation where she can work. She can pay the bills. She can get her car maintained. It's not a ton of, you know,
right,
slush fund here, but she can start to really get somewhere and not constantly rely on other sources. So those are, we need more of those affordable housing units. And please don't let people be afraid of it. It is not those people. Those people could be bank tellers, and they could be teacher's aides in your kid's school. They're the home health care aides that take care of your mom. Mm-hmm. That's who those people are that need these affordable housing units. In some cases, you're talking about disabilities that prevent somebody from working, but your disability check of $700-some a month isn't enough to pay the rent. But if you're a single and you can get one of these units for $300, well, gosh, that's different, isn't
right.
it?
Right.
And where do they apply? Is this through HUD or?
No, they would go to the individual apartment units. They would go to those offices and and apply for those units. And like I said, there isn't enough, but I'm so glad to see it. And I hope people really have their eyes open and take a drive around to the Willows in Flemington or I forget what it's called up in Clinton. Just have a look. They're beautiful.
You're not talking about Halsted Place.
Yes.
Well, the lowest, what I was told was the least expensive rental there was $1,600. Now, maybe they weren't, no, that doesn't, unless they're not going to divulge that they.
That could be a three-bedroom unit. Because
no,
what the way they're priced is it is income-based and the size of the unit. So, in other words, if you're at the top end of the income and you're looking at a three-bedroom, you could be looking at a three-bedroom in the $1,600 to $1,900 range, but that's less than – that's because you're making a certain amount of money. It all slots based on income and unit size.
Since you're a development director, is there any upcoming events that you have in the next few months?
So we just finished an event last week. We had a trivia night and over at Lone Eagle, and it was so much fun that my board wants to do another one. So we don't have a date for that yet, but we're looking like March.
Okay.
It was just really fun. It was $40, a little something to eat, free beer, and you play trivia. And it was just a really good time. So we're planning on doing another one of those, TBD. And then we have our Box City event coming up in May. I believe it's May 20th is the date. I have to look at a calendar to verify that, but it's the Saturday, the week before Memorial Day. And that really is just such a cool event because I love it for a lot of reasons. One, it is it's a great fundraiser for us. We generally raise somewhere in the neighborhood of $25,000 with that event. It's very tied to the cause.
Do you bring your own boxes?
It is BYOB. You have to bring your own box.
Okay.
It's the only B that you're allowed to bring. You must bring your own box, and you spend the night over at 100 and Central sleeping outside in a box. And, you know, we want to be careful about making it clear that it's not to represent that homeless people in 100 and sleep in boxes. The idea is, one, it's just the fun visual of Box City, and also it's about giving up your comfort for a night. So, giving up the comfort
of home.
Our church
was involved this past.
Yeah. Oh, your church is always involved. They're fantastic.
Yeah. And they're helping Zion too this year. So
yeah, it's a great youth group activity. It's a great family activity. Our title sponsor every year is Unity Bank, and we have had the president of the bank sleep outside in a box. So they truly are a community bank. So it's really appropriate for everyone. It tends to be teenagers, but it is by no means limited to teens.
Right.
But
right.
I just think visually it's a really cool event, very tied to the cause, very impactful. People come back. Kids come back after they've been in college and come back and do
bring
Box
your
City.
Bags
too. Yeah, I bring an air mattress too because I'm over 40, so I'm allowed.
really. We need a website for people to find out more about you.
Our website is www.familypromisehc.org. So that's as HC as in Hunterdon County. Familypromisehc.org.
Is there a phone number?
908-782-2490.
908-782-2490?
You got it.
All right. I remembered it. Boy, that's shocking. Are you guys still looking for places to house
homeless,
you know, like for a week?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're always looking for host sites. So anybody who has the ability to have four, really six separate sleeping areas, because our capacity is four families or up to 14 people at a time. And those sleeping areas typically would be a room, an office, a bedroom. But in some cases, we've had some congregations who use their fellowship hall and put up partitions. So there's a lot of creativity in that. So it's a room for each family, and then want two rooms or two sleeping areas for the overnight hosts. Kitchen is great, but not necessary. Showers, great, but not necessary. Laundry, terrific, but not necessary.
So what happens if they don't have showers?
We have a shower at our day center.
Okay, so they'd go there to shower?
And then the YMCA, we have a really great partnership with them. They allow they give our families free memberships, and they allow them to use their bathrooms and showers and all that. So that's a solvable problem.
Where's your day center?
We're at 10 East Main Street. We're at the Flemington Presbyterian Church.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Got it.
Right down the end of the block.
Yep. Yeah.
Right. Now, what was I going to say? Going back just for, I know we have about 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. So just going back real quickly for volunteers, it's not a formal training that they go through, but they get taught what, basically?
I mean, it would be a lot about what's involved, what is expected of you, what is not expected of you. Like I said, you know, you are not there to provide childcare. The parents are there to provide child care. Right. You're welcome to play with the kids, but you're not there to do that. If you witness something you're uncomfortable with, which doesn't happen very often. And it's just basically an overview of the expectations. When we bring a new host site or a support team on board, we do a formalized in-person training. It's kind of hard to loop everybody into that, but we will often extend an invitation to other sites to say, listen, we're having this training. If you want to send any of your people, you're welcome to do that. We're also working with our national office on, we're hoping that they are putting together some training videos that can then be shared with our folks, just so we have that consistency.
Okay. Real quick, the website and the phone number again in the last 30 seconds.
Sure. FamilyPromiseHC.org, and the phone number is 908-782-2490.
Colleen, I can't thank you enough for coming on.
Thanks
been a pleasure.
Thanks for having me. Always enjoy it.
And
thank you,
you will come back, I know, because we will have
absolutely.
You back.
Absolutely.
You know, you've been listening to Mental Health Matters, folks. And remember, mental health really does matter. See you next week, same time, same station.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in a critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime. And selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 and Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technology to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience.